Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, May 2, 2020. Energy. Oil jumps 17% for week, closes at $19.78. Rig count sinks to 219 in the Permian, 201 in Texas. By Mella McEwen. M. McEwen at MRT.com. Glimmers of brighter days ahead gave crude oil prices their first weekly gain in a month. Production cuts of about 9.7 million barrels a day by members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, along with other nations such as Russia, Mexico, and Norway, were expected to begin Friday, joined by operators from Chevron to ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and Royal Dutch Shell. Midland-based Concha Resources said it would curtail 4-5% of its production. At the same time, there were signs the demand destruction caused by the coronavirus pandemic was starting to ease. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange gained 17% this week, including a 5% rise Friday to close the week at $19.78 a barrel. The posted price ended the week at $16.25 a barrel. Natural gas prices briefly neared the $1.95 mark on the NYMEX as June began the near-month contract. But prices could not maintain those gains, losing 6 cents Friday to close at $1.89 per MCF. Rig count slide continues. Rig counts sank for the 8th consecutive week as operators continue to lay down rigs amid low oil prices and plunging demand for crude oil. The U.S. rig count approached the 400 mark, dropping 57 to 408, just above the lowest point of the last oil bust of 2014 through 2016, when the rig count fell to 404 in May 2016, according to the Baker Hughes weekly rig count. Texas saw its rig count fall by 30 to 201, and the Permian Basin lost 27 rigs to 219. New Mexico fell 4 to 66 rigs. Eddy County, New Mexico, kept its status as the most active county in the Permian with 38 rigs at work within county lines, down 3 for the week. Midland County and Lee County, New Mexico, were second with 28 rigs each, down 3 for Midland County and 1 for Lee County. Martin County fell 3 rigs to 21. Loving County had 18 rigs, unchanged from the previous week. Howard County and Reeves County each had 16 rigs, down 2 in Howard County and down 1 in Reeves. Pecos County reported 10 rigs for a second week. Upton County reported the steepest drop for the week, down 4 rigs to 9. Tall City Brewing, Blue Door, await decision on bars. By J.C. Lewis. jc.lewis@hearstnp.com. Governor Greg Abbott on Monday announced restaurants could open on Friday, but bars have not yet been given the go-ahead, even those that serve food. Jeff Thomas, an owner at Tall City Brewing Company, said they are trying to prepare for Phase 2 of reopening, which is set for May 18. In the meantime, Tall City Brewing will continue to do curbside pickup growlers. "We've made it simple and easy," Thomas said. "You just drive to the building, and we meet you in your car and take your order. We make it easy, but it helps that the beer is great." They have been selling 32-ounce and 64-ounce growlers that can be refilled when customers bring them back. People should wash the growlers before bringing them back. The growlers are then dipped in a bucket of sanitizer, he said. Thomas said they have been doing about 60 fill and refills a day and have done more than 3,000 fills and refills since the pandemic started. "We've been talking about whether we want to continue some sort of curbside service as we go, just because it's been so successful," he said. Tall City has continued brewing beer to fill kegs to be ahead when they open. Thomas said they supply to restaurants and will hopefully be part of the Midland Rockhound season. "We are going to do everything we can to open up safely and responsibly," he said. "We're going to go with the guidelines. We're going to go with the procedures and capacity we're allowed to. But we just want everyone to know that we're excited to open back up. It's exciting to go to work. Erica Mann, owner of the Blue Door, said that before closing, the bar had been practicing the sanitation that Abbott had suggested restaurants do. "We had already limited our capacity by removing tables and chairs," she said. "We had posted signs on what our limited capacity was. We had also limited what size groups could be. We installed hand sanitizer throughout the bars." She said they also had policies and checklists for sanitation and hand washing. Mann said they are playing the waiting game at the moment, and they still aren't sure what exactly will be recommended until they get closer to May 18. She said her employees are ready to get working, just like most Texans are. "You're cautious, but it's exciting to go to work. But there's a lot of responsibility and concern for the safety," Mann said. "We're all trying to balance those mixed emotions with wanting to be able to work again, but also do it in a way that's safe for our community and ourselves." The Blue Door will be hosting a kitten and puppy vaccination and microchip clinic today on the patio. The clinic, by appointment only, is with Fix West Texas. Mann said she has actively been involved with Fix West Texas and was contacted by founder Karen Patterson about hosting a small clinic. She said this was a bright spot during the coronavirus pandemic. "It is something we can do that is really good, and who doesn't want a patio with puppies and kittens on it? I think it is something people need right now." Pet Clinic. To make an appointment for the vaccination microchip clinic at the Blue Door, go to fixwesttexas.org. Delivery.com operator supports local restaurants. By Mella McEwen. mmcewen@mrt.com. With restaurants closing down their dining rooms during the coronavirus pandemic, delivery services were called upon to help make up the gap. "We're doing all we can to support our local restaurants," Rustin Hicks, local owner-operator of Texas To Go, now part of Delivery.com, said in a phone interview. One way he did that was by waiving all processing fees charged the restaurants through the end of April. "We owe our success to local restaurants, Jumburrito, Dos Compadres, and Johnny's Barbecue. They got me into this business," Hicks said. He said not only is Delivery.com working to help local restaurants, but also to ensure its drivers remain safe. "We're sending flash training modules and tracking drivers' engagement," he said. "We're doing our part to keep small businesses running and to help flatten the curve by our drivers being aware of preventative measures." Additional safety measures include no longer accepting pay-at-pickup to limit touch points and ensuring restaurants have orders ready with social distancing in mind, Hicks said. "In placing their orders, customers can also instruct the drivers to leave the food at the door and notify them of its arrival via text message. In placing their orders, customers can also ask that no utensils be included with the order." Hicks predicted that business would grow as more and more people become aware of their options and more local restaurants join Delivery.com. He said between Midland and Odessa, more than 100 restaurants are participating, and 30 drivers are on the road making deliveries daily. "Our drivers deserve a lot of credit," Hicks said. "They are on the front line." Conditional reopening. Retail. General Manager. Mall is off to a good start. By Mella McEwen. mmcewen@mrt.com. As Midland Park Mall employees prepared to open the mall doors to the public for the first time since March 19, they were pleased to see customers waiting to enter the shopping center. "We're a big part of the community, so we're happy to be back," Casey Domick, general manager, said Friday afternoon in a phone interview. "So far, we're off to a good start. I'm pleased a number of our tenants decided to reopen. I know what they had to do to get their stores ready." Not all stores reopened on Friday, nor has the mall required them to, but he expects those that have remained closed will reopen as everyone becomes used to the new protocols and they prepare their stores for business. During the time the mall was closed, Domick said employees were busy preparing to operate under health protocols from the Centers for Disease Control and local health officials. Sanitizing stations were installed throughout the property. Tables in the food court were separated to meet social distancing guidelines, as were bathroom sinks and stalls. Signs encouraging social distancing and marking off proper distancing were also installed throughout the mall. Two entrances have been closed to help encourage social distancing. "We encourage our tenants to be mindful of what 25% occupancy looks like," he said, referring to Governor Greg Abbott's guidelines that, as businesses reopen, they initially restrict occupancy to 25%. Mall employees, contractors, and tenants are required to check their temperatures and do other health checks before coming to work, and are required to wear masks at work, as well as wash their hands frequently. While shoppers are not required to do the same, Domick said they are strongly encouraged to do health checks before coming to the mall and wear masks while shopping. Masks are available at no charge at the mall's office, he said. We want to ensure we're doing everything right. Now, because we have some big celebrations coming up, Dick's Sporting Goods will be opening and the mall's 40th anniversary, Domick said. Our property is an integral part of our community, not only in terms of shopping, dining, and entertainment, but also job creation, small business growth, and community support. We look forward to once again serving the needs of our community and do so in a safe and responsible manner, Domick said. The mall's owner, Simon Property, has the initiative at its properties nationwide to host food banks, clothing drives, COVID-19 mobile testing, and blood drives. Domick said, Midland Park Mall has no such events scheduled yet, but he looks forward to working with local organizations to host them. AAA, Gas Prices Across Texas Are Lowest Since 2009, by Stuart Doreen. S. Doreen at HearstNP.com. Gas hasn't been this cheap in the state of Texas since January 2009, according to AAA Texas. The statewide average fell another 3 cents to $1.50 a gallon. In Midland, there was a 2 cent drop in the past week. The average here is still the highest in the state, $1.76, which is 9 cents more than second place Laredo, $1.67, 15 cents more than neighbor to the west Odessa, $1.61, and 26 cents more than the state average, according to AAA Texas. The organization reports that downward pressure on pump prices is likely to continue because of decreased demand and high gasoline stock supplies. COVID-19 has destroyed demand for gasoline for well over a month, said AAA Texas spokesman Daniel Armbruster in an email. This has allowed oil prices to plummet to historical lows at times in April, and gas prices have slid to prices not seen in more than 11 years in the Lone Star State. AAA Texas reported the following average prices across the region: $1.30 in Abilene, a decrease of 2 cents, $1.44 in Amarillo, a decrease in 4 cents, $1.49 in St. Angelo, a decrease of 3 cents, $1.50 in Lubbock, a decrease of 5 cents, and $1.62 in El Paso, a decrease of 1 cent. The lowest average in any of the largest metropolitan areas AAA Texas surveys is $1.17 in Sherman-Denison. Abilene has the next lowest average statewide. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. Drivers in Odessa are also faring better than those in Midland when it comes to the price drop year over year. AAA Texas reports that drop has been $1.13 in Odessa compared to $1.02 in Midland. The statewide average is $1.12. This week, Midland, $1.76, Laredo, $1.67, Corpus Christi, $1.66, El Paso, $1.62, Odessa, $1.61, College Station, Bryan, $1.60, state average, $1.50. Last week, Midland, $1.78, Laredo, $1.67, Corpus Christi, $1.67, Odessa, $1.63, College Station, Bryan, $1.63, El Paso, $1.63, state average, $1.53. Source, TexasGasPrices.com. MISD announces plans for class of 2020. From Staff Reports. Midland ISD announced Friday alternate activities in lieu of formal graduation ceremonies for the class of 2020. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, the district cannot safely conduct traditional graduation ceremonies, according to a press release from MISD. The district will continue to consider additional celebrations as permitted by state and health guidelines, according to the release. It does not mean this is a final plan, Midland ISD Superintendent Orlando Riddick said on the district's live stream Friday afternoon. He did say the current plan is based on comments from hundreds of seniors, their parents, and other members of the community. The first part is the opportunity to have a photo taken so the student has a memento. The senior can wear formal attire or their cap and gown for the picture, according to an MISD press release. The second part is that Midland ISD wants each senior to submit a video clip that for a video to be shown at Big Sky Drive-In. This plan is not making everyone happy, Riddick said in the live stream. It is not making everyone at the Riddick home happy. He discussed other talked about scenarios, including using Grande Communications Stadium. He said there are issues with the new turf at Grande and not having anything to cover it so chairs could be put down. He said there would be other logistics as well. He said no situation is perfect for Class 6A senior classes, including moving graduation into the summer. He also said everything is fluid and changes might offer other opportunities. Parents will receive more information from their campuses, according to the release. The district's graduation plan is below. Senior picture, cap and gown, or prom, formal attire. Seniors only. Schedule a prom or senior portrait at no cost. Limousine and decorated backdrop provided by Classic Honda of Midland and Platinum Limo. Students remain in vehicles in the Honda lot until called and stay 6 feet apart at all times. May 30 through June 1. Midland High School and Early College High School, June 6 through 7. Lee High School and Coleman High School. Senior watch events at Big Sky Drive-In. Senior and up to four guests in one vehicle. Senior and guests must remain in their vehicle. No restrooms or concessions available. Each of the high schools will watch a pre-recorded video that will include speeches from the valedictorian and salutatorian or top student, Superintendent Orlando Riddick, and short clips of each graduating senior sharing a message, the district's communications department told the Reporter-Telegram in an email. June 9, ECHS, Screen 1, Coleman High School, Screen 2, June 10, MHS, June 11, LHS. June 9 through 11, in-home watch events. Download or live stream a professional commencement video for a family watch party. Out and About by Julie Donnelly. Trishiti receives Redfern Award. Former Midland County Public Library Director John Trishiti was honored as the seventh recipient of the Rosalind Redfern Benefactor Award during an event at the Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch. Beautiful long white drapes, spotlighted with red and purple hue, hung from the ceiling, which set the tone for the cocktail evening. While standing in front of the commemorative window tree that honors all past award winners that now bears his name, tears fell down Drashidi's face as he said he felt very unworthy to be compared with previous recipients. He first thanked Rosalind Redfern Grover and told how she told him he was the award winner. Trishiti also thanked the late Joan Baskin, who he said was one of his earliest champions, former county judge Mike Bradford, and the late F. Marie Hall. He then highlighted his love of libraries, saying it was a place where everyone is the same. Trishiti ended his speech by thanking wife Diana for everything. City of Midland crews work on a water main break Thursday in the 4600 block of Wadley Avenue between Midland Drive and Whittle Way. Animal Services modifies operations. The City of Midland Animal Services facility has modified operations for the safety of staff and residents, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Phones will be answered 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. weekdays beginning Monday. The shelter will be open 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Friday. To minimize the number of people in the building and comply with social distancing requirements, there will be a ticket dispenser located near the shelter entrance doors. After taking a number, residents should wait in their vehicle until their number is displayed on the now serving sign. Once their ticket number is displayed, they will be allowed in the building. If assistance is needed after hours, call 685-7420, press 1 and leave a message, or call the Midland Police Department's non-emergency number, 685-7110. Public housing authorities receive funds. Public housing authorities and Section 8 voucher programs in Midland have received several federal grants to help with coronavirus-related improvements and maintenance to local public housing programs, U.S. Senator John Cornyn announced Friday. The Midland County Housing Authority received $69,830 and the Housing Authority of Midland received $32,463, according to a press release from the Senator's office. The funding comes through the Department of Housing and Urban Development as part of the CARES Act. Catholic churches not having Mass. The Catholic churches of the Diocese of San Angelo will not be moving to Phase 1 of the return to public celebration of Mass this weekend, Bishop Michael Siss said in a statement. A few remaining points of the Diocese's safety protocols are not yet finalized, he said. We are making good progress, but there is still more preparatory work to be done, Siss said. MCPL offers curbside pickup service. Midland County Public Library patrons may pick up books, DVDs, audiobooks, and other materials with curbside service, which is available 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Thursday at the downtown branch. Patrons may reserve materials using the library's online catalog or by calling 688-4331 or 742-7410. Once an order is ready for pickup, the library will contact the patron via email or by phone. To pick up items, patrons must enter the parking lot from Missouri Avenue and follow the signs to the designated pickup area. Patrons will call a number posted at the curbside area, and staff will deliver the materials. Library employees will wear masks and gloves to deliver materials to patrons, according to a press release from the library. Grocery store hours during coronavirus. Albertsons Market, 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday, 3317 North Midland Drive. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Tuesday and Thursday. HEB, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Customer 60+. Orders can be called in 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at 833-397-0080. Groceries will be delivered by Favor Delivery. For more information, go to newsroom.heb.com. Market Street, 6 a.m. to midnight. For shoppers 60+, 7 to 9 a.m. Monday and Thursday. Walmart, 7 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. 7 to 8 a.m. curbside delivery pickup for first responders and customers 60+ with disabilities or at risk.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, May 2nd, 2020, Section A. Sticking with takeout. Restaurants get green light. Some make decision to stick to takeout and curbside, by Royal McGregor. Many restaurants welcomed back customers Friday as COVID-19 restrictions eased, but not all businesses jumped at the opportunity. The husband and wife duo and co-owners of Taqueria Reynosa, Martin Rocha and Isamar Rocha, said their restaurant, which transitioned from a food truck to a brick-and-mortar establishment in 2017, will continue to operate as it did during the stay-at-home executive order issued by the Governor Greg Abbott March 20th that effectively closed seating areas for restaurants and bars due to the coronavirus. The Taqueria Reynosa owners said they talked about reopening, but came to the conclusion that they will continue to provide takeout and curbside service only. We are actually going to keep doing our takeout and curbside service because we feel that's the best way for our staff and our customers to be safe, Martin Rocha said in Spanish and was translated by his wife. Our number one goal is to make sure our staff and our customers stay healthy. Isamar Rocha said during her interview with the Odessa American that Taqueria Reynosa wants to see how Phase 1, which allows restaurants to reopen at 25% occupancy of Abbott's reopening process, goes. She said, it's possible the restaurant will start seating people during Phase 2 of the reopening process, which is scheduled for May 18th. Though the stay-at-home order prevented customers from sitting inside Taqueria Reynosa, the husband and wife duo used the opportunity to do remodeling as their restaurant was previously a gas station. We want to finish the remodel next week, so when we do let customers back in, it can be a nice welcome home, Isamar Rocha said. We have that family connection with customers because a lot of them come here on a daily basis. We know what they like to eat. We know what they like to drink. That's what we miss. But right now, we are more worried about their safety. If Taqueria Reynosa decided to open at 25% capacity, Isamar Rocha said that would mean about 13 people would be able to be inside the establishment, which includes staff. The restaurant currently has between 6 and 8 people working at a time, and that leaves about 5 to 7 customers inside the restaurant. Isamar Rocha said the restaurant will slow play the transition back to normalcy. With the support of our staff and the support of our community, we got through this, but we still have to take it day by day, she said. We can't jump the bridge. We have to slowly take it slow. Drive-through gets more tests by Michael Merlot. Drive-through testing at the Ector County Coliseum as of Friday tested a total of 28 people, and all the results are pending. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton said that the testing site has received 129 total calls and that they would be able to keep up with those needing to be tested. When asked if the county received the 500 tests they previously asked the state for, he said no, but later got a text telling him that the county did receive those tests. Shelton reported that out of 1,300 tests, the county has had 78 confirmed cases with 3 probable, 58 recovered, and 4 deaths. He added that the family of the 4-month-old case was considered recovered and that one of the EOC members who tested positive for COVID-19 is considered recovered, and the other was getting better as well. Medical Center Hospital President and CEO Russell Tippin said out of 724 tests, 50 have tested positive. Tippin said that one of the positives they had been reporting was a duplicate. He said that 2 positives are in the hospital and 1 is in the CCU. 646 are negative, 28 are pending, and no pending cases are in the hospital. As of Friday, no positive tests have been reported at MCH in the last 72 hours. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown reported that out of 295 tests, 13 have been positive, 267 have been negative, and 15 are pending. Brown said that no pending cases are in the hospital. MCH sent out a press release Friday that detailed they will require everyone who enters the hospital or outside clinics to wear a mask, including visitors, patients, and staff members. This policy will go into effect immediately, it states, and is aimed at continuing to keep patients, visitors, and staff safe. The release also asks visitors or patients to bring their own masks, if possible. If they do not have a mask, MCH states they have a limited supply of masks that will be provided to them. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Rohith Saravanan said that ORMC encourages everyone to bring their own masks as well. Both ORMC and MCH stressed that just because the economy is reopening, people should still practice social distancing and stay home. Saravanan said that although there have been no positive cases in the last few days, we actually have less of a sense of where we are on the curve now with such few cases than we did when we were actually starting to build, because now it's sporadic. He said that hopefully antibody testing and testing in general may provide more data to see if Odessa is on the tail end or on the initial part of the exposure. He added that he is cautiously optimistic to say that we are past that point in the curve. Saravanan also added that with the CDC adding more symptoms to the COVID-19 screening, more people will be tested, and that if someone was screened before and did not receive a test but is still having symptoms, to call for another screening. Other COVID-19 news. A press release from Texas Senator John Cornyn detailed Friday that public housing authorities and Section 8 voucher programs in the Midland-Odessa area received multiple federal grants totaling $375,055 to help with COVID-19-related improvements and maintenance to local public housing programs. The funding came from the Department of Housing and Urban Development as part of the CARES Act under the Supplemental Public Housing Operating Funds Program, which helps prevent, prepare, and respond to the coronavirus pandemic in public housing. The Odessa Police Department reportedly showed up to Anytime Fitness Friday in Odessa because the gym reportedly tried to open prematurely. Owner of Anytime Fitness, Clint Gillespie, said in a phone interview that opening wasn't something he was trying to hide after posting a Facebook video about it to the public on the gym's page. "It was an attempt for us to try to stay alive and stay in business. This executive order, which we feel is unconstitutional. We feel like it'll be ruled that way whenever the lawsuits start flying. I just hope we'll be around long enough to be able to take advantage of that or see that through." He said that they are continuing to pay all of their expenses on zero income, and that when Odessa police showed up to his gym Friday, they had warned him that he would be cited if he continued to stay open. "We're in a situation where we absolutely cannot survive because we're being forced by the governor to not open," he said. Gillespie said in a previous phone call that around 35 to 40 people came in Friday. He also said that the Anytime Fitness Odessa is a corporate gym, and that the decision to stay open would ultimately come from corporate. Gillespie said that OPD told him if they got a call or complaint about the gym being open, that they would be obligated to issue citations, and they wanted to let our members know that they would not be immune from that. "It wouldn't befall only on the owner or manager," he said. OA wins Texas APME Awards. For the second time in 3 years, Odessa American reporters have won first place in the Texas Associated Press Managing Editors Journalism Competition for Freedom of Information Reporting on Misbehavior by the City of Odessa. Paul Wedding, who is now a reporter for the Houston Chronicle, took first place in the annual competition this year for his reporting on a police report filed by a city attorney who said he feared a physical assault by former councilman Malcolm Hamilton during a 2019 city council meeting. The city stonewalled for months until ordered by the Texas Attorney General's office to produce the report. Emily Lacaz, USA Today Network Managing Editor of Regional Investigations, judged the category and called the reporting excellent effort on the part of the Odessa American and its staff to pry loose information from the city that its leaders clearly wanted to keep hidden. "This entry embodies the spirit of this contest category, which rewards persistence and tenacity in fighting for FOI. The OA also won the Team Effort First Place Prize this year for reporting on the heartbreaking mass shooting, August 31, 2019, that left 7 dead and 25 injured in a wild shooting spree around mostly Odessa and parts of Midland by gunman Seth Ader, who was shot and killed by police in a field near Synergy Theater. Lois Norder, senior editor for investigations at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, judged the category and wrote, "Under the most trying circumstances, the Odessa American staff provided comprehensive, compelling coverage for their readers. These horrific crimes pose difficult challenges for news organizations, including not only deadline pressures, but also sensitive questions about approaching grieving families and denying fame the shooter may have sought. The OA handled these as well as any news organization in the country." The OA also placed third in breaking news for that same reporting and got an honorable mention for online package of the year for it. In the Star Breaking News Report of the Year category, the staff also placed third. Casey Dennis placed third in editorial writing and was also named as third in the Star Opinion Writer of the Year category. Her writing was described as heartfelt and outstanding by judges. The team effort, breaking news, and online awards included team members Bob Campbell, Ruth Campbell, Royal McGregor, Courtney Borchert, Mark Rogers, Ben Powell, Casey Dennis, Drew Howerton, Kennedy Mitchell, Tony Venegas, Michael Bauer, Lee Scheid, Ben Adams, Ronnie Reynosa, and Laura Dennis. Local News Roundup. MCH Benefit. The Kendra Scott Store of Midland will be donating a portion of their sales to Medical Center Health System for COVID-19 relief through May 10th. 100% of all proceeds from the State of Texas Charm and 20% of all proceeds from Midland curbside and in-store appointment purchases will benefit MCHS. In addition, as a special thank you during Nurses Week, nurses will receive a 20% discount if they shop between May 4th and May 6th. As always, nurses receive a 15% discount year-round. Customers can make their purchases at kendrascott.com, which will then give instructions on how to pick up their items at curbside. The Kendra Scott location in Midland can be found at the Commons at North Park off Loop 250. Change in water disinfection. The city will temporarily change the method used to disinfect the water supply June 1st. Residents may notice a bleach or chlorine-like smell in the water, but it is nothing to be concerned about. During this interim period of approximately 30 days, the city will use only chlorine to disinfect the water supply instead of the combination of chlorine and ammonia to form chloramines. The change in disinfection will be implemented as a proactive maintenance activity in our distribution system to assist in maintaining adequate chlorine residuals. The city has made this same change to its disinfectant in past years with minimal impact on its customers. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, has been notified of the change in the treatment of the water and concurs that it is the best method of ensuring that adequate chlorine residuals are maintained throughout the distribution system. For more information, please call Thomas Kerr, Director of Utilities, at 432-335-4634. Mixed beverage gross receipts drop during coronavirus pandemic by Royal McGregor. Mixed beverage gross receipts, according to the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts, totaled more than $7.7 billion a year ago. Between February 1st and February 29th, the Comptroller's Office totaled $665,657,297 in the sale of beer, wine, and liquor. That number dropped significantly to $236,183,745 from March 1st to March 31st, after Governor Greg Abbott signed his executive order, which effectively closed seating areas for restaurants and bars due to the coronavirus. The sharp decline of $400 million statewide from month to the next has effects on the Odessa-Midland area. Odessa saw $5,127,799 in February, but that number plummeted to $1,838,448 in March, while Midland totaled $5,465,289 in February, and it fell to $2,330,340 in March. In the first 3 months of 2020, Midland has totaled $13,167,364 in mixed beverage receipts, while Odessa has sold $11,684,360. In the same time frame a year ago, Midland had $16,418,683 and Odessa was at $14,996,717. If that three-month trend continues, the mixed beverage receipts across Texas would decrease by nearly $2 billion. Abbott announced during a press conference Monday afternoon that he would let the current stay-at-home executive order expire April 30th that would allow restaurants to reopen, but bars would remain closed. The new executive order from Abbott would limit occupancy to 25% capacity. Abbott said, if the spread of coronavirus continues to decline, that phase two would be put in place on May 18th, which would increase occupancy to 50% capacity. It's time to set a new course, a course that responsibly opens up business in Texas, Abbott said during the press conference. We will open in a way that uses safe standards.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, May the 3rd, 2020. Section A. Three Midland Memorial Hospital nurses share their experiences from inside the pandemic. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE, at MRT.com. It's a waiting game for the nurses caring for coronavirus patients at Midland Memorial Hospital. They started running drills to prepare for an influx of patients, for multiple patients needing to be intubated at once, for any scenarios they could think of, before the first positive was confirmed in Midland County. It took nearly 2 months for the virus to spread from other parts of the country to the Permian Basin. By the time the first case was reported in Midland on March 19th, Governor Greg Abbott had already declared a statewide emergency, and President Donald Trump had declared a national one. Within a week of the initial positive, hospital staff lost their first patient from coronavirus complications. That same day, the U.S. became the world leader in confirmed COVID-19 infections, and nurses in New York City were photographed wearing trash bags in lieu of hospital gowns. The nurses at Memorial Hospital watched as news broadcasts turned to 24-hour coverage of the worst-hit series, wondering if their city was next. Now, with 82 confirmed positives in Midland County as of Saturday, and restaurants and stores celebrating the go-ahead to reopen, the nurses wait to see if the worst is nearly over. Or, they wonder, is a second wave imminent? When you have a patient pass away in previous situations, you would have the family at their bedside gathered around. In this instance, you're the only other person in that room. Aaron Cordona. There were 9 times during the weeks Aaron Cordona was assigned to the COVID-19 unit when she would walk to her car at the end of her shift and cry. She worried about bringing the virus home, exposing her husband and 12-year-old daughter. She debated staying at a hotel to protect them. That was the hardest part, having that fear that you were going to take something home to your loved ones, even though you were trying to do your best to help others. My heart is to help others, and I also didn't want to put my family at risk. Even after she was moved last week as elective surgeries resumed, Cordona has kept up precautions to shield her family from exposure. She keeps her work shoes in a container in her trunk, wearing sandals when she leaves her house every day. At the end of each shift, she changes from her hospital scrubs to her home scrubs and washes her hands. Before she gets into her car, she sprays her shoes with disinfectant and puts them in a plastic tub. She wipes down her glasses, bag, and phone and leaves them in the trunk. When she gets home, she takes her clothes off in the mudroom and goes straight to the shower. It's really just trying to slow down and think about it, Cordona said. You never really realize how much you touch every day until you really start thinking about it. Slowing down and going step by step was something Cordona reminded herself to do before she entered any COVID-19 patients' rooms. To limit possible exposures, nurses are responsible for the majority of these patients' care. Being nearly the only people allowed in the room means nurses account for almost all of COVID-19 patients' interactions while they're in the hospital. When one of Cordona's patients died, she said, "There was a lot of weight on my shoulders. It didn't hit me as hard, I think, until that day. Yeah, the whole COVID-19 experience hit me the hardest on that day." Cordona said she couldn't imagine what the family went through, being unable to communicate only with her and not their loved one who was dying. It was also frustrating to know that people are dying from a preventable disease. The patient was a resident at a Midland Medical Lodge, the source of an outbreak where more than 40 residents and employees have been infected. It could have been prevented if people were just really taking all the CDC recommendations seriously, maybe staying at home or staying away from those who are more at risk, like the elderly. I'm not saying that patient could have been saved, but I just feel like everyone really needs to pay close attention and try to help out those who are the most vulnerable. Every day is the front lines for a nurse, not just during a pandemic. Grace Mintz. Grace Mintz graduated from nursing school 1 year ago this week. "I thought I learned a lot in nursing school, but I'd only scratched the surface," she said. "It's been a whirlwind. It's been fast. I kind of didn't expect to be taking care of any pandemic in my first year of nursing. It's been surreal watching the disease and its fallout unfold on the news and realizing you're a part of history. But it's also just another day working in the critical care unit, which Mint has been assigned to since she graduated. In ICU, we see very serious illnesses every day, and this is just another one that we have to buckle down and take care of the patients the best way we can." She said her mom, because moms are protective, worries about her caring for coronavirus patients. For Mint, it's what she signed up for. The parallels drawn between nurses and superheroes feels weird for her. "My brother is a captain in the Army. He's actually served in Afghanistan, and I understand what he means when he says he doesn't like when people thank him, because that's his job, and he loves his job. But there are some differences between the everyday working in critical care and caring for the critical patients in a pandemic. It's quieter, for one, because the patients are quarantined in their rooms and no one's visiting them. The no-visitor policy has been challenging for Mintz, especially with her parents being in dire health. She recalled having a patient who was very ill and unable to speak, and the pain she imagined the patient's family experienced. I can just picture that being my mom or dad, or being my husband in the bed and not being able to hold their hand to help them through a really hard time. I couldn't do much more than putting a speakerphone up next to them and letting the family talk to them. Now that the hospital has received a donation of iPads patients can use to video chat with their loved ones, Mintz says she thinks patients are in better spirits. She used the tablets twice on Thursday to connect with families. "I think one of my patients actually got some rest afterward," she said. "I'm sure that helped her anxiety of being in the room all by herself." It's just constantly preparing, and it was like a waiting game of when is this going to hit? Or is this the calm before the storm? Or is this how it's going to be from now on? Abby Villa. A certified trauma nurse, Abby Villa has been assigned to the emergency department for 9 years. Her career as a charge nurse has spanned a train accident, a mass shooting, and now a pandemic. "It's not something that we expected or we knew was coming because we didn't know this was coming. But we chose to be nurses and we chose to be front line, and that's what we're going to do." Villa said Midland Memorial has been preparing since day one. There are daily drills involving nurses, physicians, respiratory therapists, and surgeons running through every scenario they can think of. "Fighting a disease so new means constantly having to readapt to the latest research and guidelines. On a daily basis, we're getting new information, new changes from the CDC. You have to keep yourself updated. Our directors do daily huddles with us, going over new changes that were made the day before or even hours before. They want us to be adaptable and flexible and be like, okay, this is something new. Today's going to be a new change. Let's go with it." A weighty change for Villa was emergency staff being required to screen everyone who comes to the hospital. With the emergency room entrance the only one available to those seeking treatment, they ask every patient if they have a fever, a cough, shortness of breath, or if they've been in contact with someone who's positive or they've traveled, originally outside the U.S., but that's been expanded to include areas such as New York or New Orleans. The hospital's census has been cut in half because officials urge residents to stay home if they're sick and follow up with a primary care doctor instead. The emergency department went from seeing 200 patients a day to maybe 60 or 80 patients a day. It was actually the opposite of what we thought was going to happen. We thought we were going to see this high influx of patients. Rather than assuming that means Midland lucked out and won't be hit as hard as other areas, Villa said hospital staff continued to prepare for the worst. As businesses reopened this weekend, she said she can't help worrying it might be too soon, but all they can do is wait and plan accordingly. "We're still waiting to see, is it going to continue? Is it going to worsen? We're still prepared. We're still going to continue doing our mock drills for an influx of COVID patients because we don't know when it's going to be the end." City. Airline flights to drop by 2/3 in May. Southwest to have just 2 departures to Love Field. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. The number of flights leaving Midland International Airport in May will be 1/3 of the number from before the coronavirus, according to the City of Midland. Justine Ruff, Director of Airports, said Friday that the airlines using Midland International will combine for 10 departures in May, which is down from the 28 flights, not including Sunday-only flights, in March. These flights are two on Southwest to Dallas Love Field and four each on American Eagle and United Express. Ruff said the airlines expect a full recovery to take place at the end of 2022. The impact of the coronavirus on the economy was a reason the Federal Aviation Administration awarded $10 billion in economic relief to U.S. airports. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security CARES Act was signed into law by President Donald Trump last month and is providing direct economic assistance for American workers and families, small businesses, and preserves jobs for American industries, according to the Department of the Treasury. It was announced last month that the city of Midland will receive nearly $23 million in economic relief funding for Midland International. The $22.935 million is the seventh most for any airport in the state and the most for any Texas airport not located in Dallas-Fort Worth, Houston, San Antonio, or Austin. The funding for Midland was $7.5 million more than for El Paso and more than double of any of the other airports in the region. Lubbock's Preston Smith International Airport was third with $9,535,889. Ruff said the FAA used an airport's total debt, reserve on hand, and boardings for the 2018 year to determine funding amounts. "The biggest reason we did as well as we did is we didn't have debt," Ruff said. County doesn't show high numbers of unemployment claims. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstNP.com. Midlanders weren't rushing to claim unemployment insurance in numbers seen elsewhere in the state through mid-April, according to the Texas Workforce Commission. Whether one was looking by State House District, State Senate District, Congressional District, or even at the county level, Midlanders didn't rank among the top 25 across the state. Typically, it was further away and sometimes at the bottom. The Texas Workforce Commission showed statistics online based on the reporting period from March 18 to April 18. During that time, the top five unemployment insurance claim industries inside Midland County were support activities for oil and gas operations, full-service restaurants, dentist offices, hotels and motels, and department stores. As far as where Midland ranks, the following could be seen. Midland County ranked outside the top 25 in terms of Texas counties. The 5,908 claimant count was less than Ector County's 6,504. Ector ranked 24th and Lubbock County ranked 20th. When looking at the 82nd House District, which includes Midland, the ranking is outside the top 25. The number of claimants was a third less than the district in the 25th spot. The State Senate District, District 31, which includes the Amarillo area, ranked the second fewest of any district across the state. 23,175 claims from a population of 861,211. The 11th Congressional District, which includes the San Angelo area, recorded the fourth fewest of any district across the state, 21,777 claimants from a population of 782,337. The districts with the fewest claimants surrounded the Amarillo, Lubbock, and Tyler areas.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.